Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to John Russell about his book, The Cansack Ghost. John has been a professional psychic for over 50 years. He's provided psychic readings for thousands of clients in over 40 countries. For over 18 years, he's been a guest on numerous radio shows and podcasts, and his books have all won multiple awards. Hi, John. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Oh, Simon, it's my pleasure. I appreciate you having me back, and I always look forward to our talks. We have such a good chat.
So we're going to talk about your latest book. It's called The Cansack Ghost, which is an odd title. How did you come up with that one?
Well, that's actually the title literally reflects a paranormal experience that we had. There was a gentleman, an elderly gentleman that was retired, and he came around to all the different apartments and businesses and things, collecting tin cans to recycle and sell. So we there in the apartment complex where we lived at the time, everybody started saving their cans for him, and they would take them out when they saw him and give him the cans so he didn't have to dig through the dumpster. But we set up a special can outside for people to put their cans in, and we also saved them in our apartments. And when we saw them, we'd take them out or we'd dump them in the can outside. So we had a can sack, quite literally, a plastic bag that we kept in the hallway. And every time we emptied a can, soda can, beer can, whatever, we put it in the can sack. And the reason it's called the Can Sack Ghost is we had a ghost that would literally rattle the sack of cans. I mean, you would audibly, you'd hear it audibly, obviously, but then you would also see it. The ghost would literally tap the bottom of the sack of cans so hard that the entire bag would jump, and you would visibly see it. You'd visibly see it move and see the can rattle and everything. And that kept up a good long time in coordination with several other paranormal events that always went on. Of course, my life is full of those. So that's the title, The Cansack Ghost. That's how that came about, because it was a literal paranormal occurrence in our lives.
Did many people see the can sack moving?
Yeah, the whole family.
Wow, it's great to have that kind of confirmation of multiple witnesses.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And for most of my life, I have paranormal experiences happen to me almost daily. I've made note of the more spectacular ones that I've kept track of and written about in my books. But there's been a lot of times where other people have seen the paranormal manifestations on the physical realm. We managed to take audio, photographs, video, and like I say, a lot of eyewitnesses.
Is there a place online where people can see your photos and video?
Unfortunately, there isn't, and I've just had to rebuild my website because the server that I was previously using became unworkable, just crashed, stopped working. So I've had to rebuild my psychic website. I've had to rebuild my author website. And I was in the process of building a place where people could see some of the photos and things and listen to some of the EVP I've collected. But since that site's unworkable now, I've got to transfer all that over to the new site. So hopefully I can get that up and running one of these days.
So you seem to be like a paranormal magnet. You have a lot more experiences than most people. Do you think it's because you're on a certain frequency? Like it's going on around all of us, but you're tuned into it.
But I'm tuned into it, yeah. And it's just my gift. It's just, some people get to play piano at the concert level all over the world. Some people get to run a world record marathon. This is my gift. This is my niche. And this is just what I do. And the other side revealed itself to me at a very early age, and I became open to it and receptive to it. And not only did I begin to allow the experiences to come to me, I began to seek out experiences And I studied everything I could. I investigated everything I could. And I think because I was so open to it, and that doorway opened up that made it easy for the other side to communicate with me, I think that's why I've had more than the average person does. But I've always been receptive my entire life. I've always sought it out. I've always studied and experienced everything that I could, learned everything that I could. So it's just my gift. It's just what I was given. And I'm really happy that it turned out that way.
I wonder how the spirits find you, if it's something like you're a light in the darkness. They can see you from miles away.
You know, that may be true. And I think, you know, the thing I've always told people, you know, I've read for clients in over 40 countries now. And to read for someone around the world is no different than if they were sitting across the table from me, because the psychic gift doesn't recognize anything as time, space, or distance limitations. That doesn't exist. It's instantaneous. It's like if you text someone from the US to the UK, they get that text instantaneously and back and forth. So it's the same thing with the psychic gift and with the connection in the spirit world. The limitations that we experience physically with time and space and so on and so forth and distance, that doesn't exist there. So there's a wide range of ways that beings on the other side could communicate to other beings about me, or the channel that's open there to get messages through to me for people, or so on and so forth. So it's an instantaneous process.
And do you feel it's difficult for the spirits to communicate with us? I'd find it really difficult, but they're on that side and they have to really concentrate to get a message to you.
Some entities, some beings, and some spirits of deceased loved ones seem to have a facility for easier communication and better communication than others do. So there is that factor. And one other thing, and I've always said this, and people that have been in radio and stuff, such as yourself, they love this analogy and they get it immediately because it's so apropos. When I was a young boy, a teenager, there was a friend that we had that had ham radio, shortwave radio. And on a good, clear night with the conditions just right in West Texas, we could talk to somebody in London, England. And it was just the most amazing, fascinating thing. And then the very next night, the atmospheric conditions might be so bad that you did good to talk to somebody across town. And I think it's a lot that way in the nether realm. I think that sometimes conditions are just so perfect that it's easy for almost anyone to come through from the other side. And other times, conditions are not just right or not just perfect, and it makes it more difficult for that communication. And if you look at all religious practices, all spiritual practices, what do? We try and create that perfect environment for that spiritual contact. You sing hymns, you light incense, you burn candles, you meditate, whatever. We're all trying to create that atmosphere that's perfect for spirit communication. And that's what they did in the old-fashioned seances. And that's what I teach people to do. In my third book, 20 Ways to Increase Your Psychic Abilities, I tell people, okay, this is how you can create an environment and be more receptive to these communications so that you're more apt to have more communication from the other side, so you get more guidance in your life.
So I wanted to talk about some of the cases in your book. One of them I really liked was that you were doing photography and you were zooming on really tiny things, and then you started spotting some paranormal stuff.
Yeah. It was just really incredible to me. I got involved in macro photography, which is just you use a special lens and it greatly magnifies super small things. So I photographed things like a single grain of salt and enlarged it to where you can see the details of what a grain of salt actually looks like. And you photograph small flowers and small insects and things like that. And in some of the things that I was photographing, particularly in dewdrops and in super small flowers, some of these flowers were like an eighth of an inch wide at their widest opening. But when you photographed them, they had as much detail as if you were looking at a rose or something like that. It was just really incredible. But in these photographs, I begin to see faces, and not pareidolia. I mean real, honest-to-God faces. There were creatures looking back at me, people looking back at me, that had eyes and noses and lips and everything perfectly well-formed. And I begin to discover that we had this realm of these super small spirits or super small beings that either inhabited or manifested in these almost microscopic places. And then I remember this one that really stands out for me, and I write about this one in the book. There was in an ice crystal I photographed, there was this space. I called him the old bearded wise man. He had this long hair that came down. He had this long beard. You could clearly see his features, his eyes, his nose, his mouth, everything. And he had a very distinct look, a very distinct appearance, very recognizable. And after I had photographed him and had seen him in that photograph of the ice crystal, he began to manifest externally, large size, outdoors in various places. Where my office was at the time, my window looked out into the backyard, and we had a big stand of very tall slash pine trees. And I would sit there and gaze out the window and look at the out into the forest, out into the woods constantly, and enjoyed that vista so much. And so by looking at it every day for years, I always knew if there was any change or anything different going on out there. And imagine my shock and surprise when I looked up one day and there was his space in the bark on one of those trees about 3 feet high, about 3 feet tall. And the exact visage that I had observed in the crystal of ice. And there he was. And I was like, my goodness. And I waved to him. I would go outside and talk to him. And his face stayed there for a long time. And then he began to manifest in various other places. And I would see him, like one time I was out watering the plants and I drug the hose across the driveway and the water made a little puddle there. And I looked back and there in the water puddle was his image. About 3 or 4 feet long in this water puddle. And then I begin to see him in places where I would go when I'd ride my motorcycle and I'd be out and I would see him there. So not only did I discover this realm of beings, I discovered that they could project themselves visibly. And yes, other people saw him, and they could project themselves visibly into our physical realm and manifest in different places. And then he has manifested yet once again when we moved from our house in the city we were living in there, moved to a new city here in a new house. I found a rock with his visage on it outside, and I have that. So he traveled with me. So it's just an incredible, amazing thing. And I always tell people, I say, look, it's fantastic as these stories are. If you will take the time to open up and to look and to see and to be receptive to these things, you can experience these things for yourself. Now, probably not in the magnitude that I do, the frequency, but these things are there. And you can experience this for yourself, and you can prove to yourself, yes, this is really real. And the purpose of that is to communicate with the other side, to get guidance for your life, to get protection, blessing from your guardian angels, to communicate with deceased loved ones, communicate with deceased pets.
So that old guy with the beard, so who was he? Did you find out anything about him?
Yeah, he's just a nature spirit of some type. And there's a lot of nature spirits out there that we need to be aware of, that they're sentient, they're intelligent, they have feelings, they have emotion, they make friendships with people. There's a whole realm of spiritual intelligence and spiritual energy out there that most of us are unaware of. And again, we need to open up to that. We need to be aware of the fascinating, incredible world that we live in, and that we can make these connections, and that there's so much more to our lives than just the physical world we wake up to. And once we understand that and connect with that, that enhances and makes our physical world better and helps us receive some of the guidance and inspiration and protection that we need.
I wanted to move on and talk to you about tarot cards.
Sure.
I don't know much about it, but I've seen how it's done. But it's not just looking at the pictures and making connections between the different cards. You do something psychic or mediumship. How does that work?
Well, you know, the tarot with me, I started studying the tarot when I was a teenager and got serious about it. Took a course to learn what I could from this course, and it was an amazing course. And then I just have continued studying my entire life. And what originally drew me to the tarot, I'm an artist and a photographer, and I love the artwork. Every tarot deck is just, you know, miniature museum full of wonderful works of art. And I like the color, and I like the artwork, the designs, the patterns and everything, and the characters on the cards. And that was what initially drew me to them. And then I discovered that I believe the tarot has an inherent power and energy and ability in and of itself. And then I think when you couple that with a person like myself that has a psychic gift, has psychic abilities, and put that together, that gives you the ability to utilize the tarot as a tool for insights into people's lives and for accurate predictions about their futures. And it's something that it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of study, takes a lot of practice. And it's something that you can begin to learn very easily, but to get really good at, I mean, really accurate. And to be really accurate in your insights about people and their circumstances, that takes dedicated years and years of practice. So that's one of the disciplines among many that I dedicated myself to. And I still use the tarot to this day. I still enjoy it to this day.
So what is the process? Do you hand the deck to your sitter and ask them to shuffle it and choose cards? Or is it you that chooses?
I used to, when I did a lot of in-person readings when I was younger. Now I do everything by phone. Everything's over the phone. So I shuffle the cards. And there are people, you know, the spiritual world is as full of dogma and ritual and tradition, superstition as the religious world is and as other worlds are. And there are people that tell you, oh, it can't be done that way. You can't do readings that way. You know, the person asking the questions has to shuffle the cards. And that's not true. That's not the case at all. If you have a real psychic gift, you've trained it, you know how to use the tarot, you shuffle the cards on behalf of that person. And you're asking the cards and you're asking your guides, and I'm asking my gift, okay, set these cards up to reveal what I need to tell this person in that reading. And absolutely, it can be done that way. And you go to my website and look at the 80-plus client testimonials that are on there, and it'll tell you, yeah, you can do it that way.
You mentioned in the book that people come to see psychics, and it's like they want you to tell them everything's going to be great, and they don't want to hear possible negative things.
Right. Yeah, you know, everybody wants to hear that they're going to win the lottery, they're going to marry tall, dark, and handsome, their health is going to be perfect, everything's going to be great. And life just doesn't work that way. I mean, even if you're in the right place at the right time doing the right things, you're still going to encounter obstacles and difficulties and setbacks. That's the way of the world. And I tell people, and I have a disclaimer on my website, when you purchase the reading, it says, I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. And I may not deliver the information coming to you in a way that you expect to hear it or want to hear it, but I'm going to tell you the truth unfiltered as the other side gives it to me for you. And that's how I approach my readings. And I tell people, I say, look, if I do see something negative, maybe there's a way to avoid it, or maybe there's a way to minimize it, or let's look at the life lesson that we're going to learn from that and then move on from that. Likewise, whatever positive things are coming, let's position ourselves to take maximum advantage of that to make sure you connect with those positives. And I give them the tools in the reading to tell them how to make those connections, what to do to move forward in positive ways. And whatever predictions I have for them, I tell them how to align themselves with that to make the maximum utilization out of that to move their lives forward in positive ways.
And do you think there's a thing that the spirits that are communicating with you, they know what the sitter needs, so they'll give them what's best for them. They're not going to mess them about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do my readings two ways, and I always have. The first aspect of the reading is that the other side gives me several things. I sit down and tune in on a client about half an hour before I call them for the reading. And the other side gives me several specifics for them, for their past, present, future, their circumstances, whatever is relevant to their life, their health, their job, their romantic situation, whatever the other side sees that they know this person needs to be aware of, needs to focus on and so forth. And then I tell the client, when we're setting up the reading, making the appointment for the reading, I tell them this, and I tell them, okay, we're doing a two-pronged approach here. One part of it is the other side is going to give me things for you that they want to communicate to you and you need to pay attention to. And their priorities may not be your priorities. So the second aspect of reading is that you can sit down and write up a list of questions that you want to ask me, that you want answers to. And that way we make sure we cover both sides of the coin. So that makes for a very complete and a very full, helpful reading for the client, because they get to ask whatever questions they want to, and the other side is going to tell me things for them that the client may not have thought to ask or may not know that they need to be aware of or may not know how to correct. So it really makes for a full, rich, satisfying reading for the client.
Have you got an example of some really amazing evidence you brought through for a sitter?
One of the most amazing things to me is that I've been able to tell people when it was relevant what the inside of their homes looked like and how it was laid out and where they might experience any specific paranormal manifestations in their homes or anything like that. One really fun example of that was when I was doing radio, they had a new DJ, and the other DJs there told me before we went on the air, they said, she's a little bit of a skeptic. She's new with us, a little bit of a skeptic. So have you got anything you can blow her hair back with? And I said, well, I'll see if anything the other side gives me. So we went on with the show and came to a spot where her grandmother came through to me. And I told her, your grandmother is on the other side. And I said, you were super close with your grandmother. You loved her a lot. And I said, you have in your bedroom, there's a chest of drawers or a little table or something there that you set up almost like a shrine to your grandmother. And I said, on this surface, you've got a framed picture of your grandmother, and you've got a candle that you light to her. And I said, you do this frequently. And I said, you talk to her, you talk to that picture, and you talk to your grandmother. And she was just gobsmacked because everything I said was 100% accurate. And that's what she frequently did. And I said, your grandmother wants you to know that she sees the light from that candle when you light it, and she smells the aroma. And I even got the particular aroma of the candle at the time. I don't recall it now, but I recall I got the aroma, and she confirmed that that was the scent the candle was. And I said, when you talk to your grandmother, she hears that. When you pray for her, she feels that. She sees the light from that candle, and she smells the aroma from the candle, and she wants you to know how much she appreciates you doing this. So there have been a lot of times that I've gotten very specific things like that for clients that I've been able to validate. And it doesn't do any good if I just got that for a client and they went, oh, wow, yeah, that's what my house looks like. There always has to be a purpose for that communication. So in this case, it was not just, oh, I can see the interior of your bedroom and, oh, yeah, you described it accurately. It was, here's what you do that your grandmother knows and appreciates from the other side. So it has to have a purpose. It has to have a meaning. And so I'm not just going to try and automatically look at everybody's house and say, oh, here's how your living room's laid out. Oh, wow. Well, that doesn't do any good. That's not a message. That doesn't do anything. But if someone from the other side has a specific communication about the living room and the way that it's laid out that's meaningful to the client, then it has purpose, then it has meaning. So I don't try and do things. I take what the other side gives me. If they give me a specific message like that, then I deliver that.
And I suppose people on the other side are just like they are before they die. So if there's people who were a pain in the ass before they died, there'll be a pain in the ass afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't go to the other side and just become the saint all of a sudden. And, you know, if you had a really great sense of humor here, you're going to have a great sense of humor on the other side, and so on and so forth. People retain their memories, their personalities, and their proclivities, and so on and so forth. And then from what I've learned from interacting with the other side, when we get there, we have the opportunity to continue to grow, to learn, you know, to continue our spiritual journey, to continue our spiritual growth.
So has anything ever scared you?
Never has. I've had, you know, way, way, way over 1,000 physical paranormal experiences, probably in the thousands, but I've documented way over 1,000. And I've been startled, but I've never been scared. I've never been frightened. I've never been afraid. The other side has communicated healing to me. My guardian angels have literally, physically saved my life on more than one occasion. It's been a very good and warm relationship with the other side. I used to tell people, I said, I think sometimes, especially when I was a kid, I had a difficult childhood. And my family was very stress-filled and full of strife and fought a lot and had a lot of problems. And that the connection I needed with my parents wasn't really there. And it was hard for me to make friends. And I used to tell people, I say, I think I was closer to the other side than I was my own family in some regards. So it's always been a very warm and very close relationship for me there.
Was there a time when you went to, is it a Civil War battlefield? I don't know if you're doing a paranormal investigation, but there was some noise there that was interfering with what you wanted to do.
Well, I went to the Civil War battlefield to conduct a paranormal investigation on my own to see what psychic impressions I could get while I was there. And while I was walking around the property, I began to hear musket fire and cannon fire and horses neighing and all this rigmarole. And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to do anything now? Because I've stumbled on a reenactment. There was a section that the field property and everything that I couldn't see from where I was at. And that's where the sounds were coming from. They were very loud, very clear, very evident. And I hate reenactments. Now, if you don't, you love them and they're your thing, God bless you. I just don't like reenactments. I don't like Civil War reenactments. I don't like, any type of old type living, vintage living reenactments and those type of things. I just don't like them. And so here I am. I'm trying to do a serious paranormal investigation and see what I can pick up from the Civil War battlefield. And my first thought is, oh, terrific. There's a group of reenactors over there now doing this reenactment. And that's going to totally, completely ruin my investigation. So I began walking in that direction to walk over there to see if I could see them and see how many there were and may possibly gauge how long this is going to go on, if I should just leave or whatever. And I got to where I could see all of the field and there wasn't a soul there in the flesh. And the gunshots continued. The fife and drums continued. And yes, they did have fife and drums in the Civil War. I had guys that marched and played the fife and the drums. I heard the horses whinnying and neighing and the sound of hoof beats and all this going on. And I just stood there with my mouth wide open because nobody was there in the flesh. And then gradually the sound faded away. So I was treated to one of the most authentic reenactments anybody could ever experience by those on the other side, by that energy that was recorded in that atmosphere that was there. And it was just absolutely mind-blowing, just incredible.
So you must have been quite excited.
Oh, tremendously, tremendously. At first, just totally shocked because it was so loud and so real. It wasn't something I was hearing psychically. It was something I was hearing with my ears. And when I got over there and discovered that there was nobody there in the flesh and these sounds of battle continued, I was like, I was gobsmacked. And then I was like, oh my God, how thrilling to have this. My very first time at a Civil War battlefield, one of the most significant sites, and to experience that first rattle out of the box, it was like, oh my God, this is everything you could ask for in a paranormal investigation.
So do you think you could have recorded it if you weren't hearing it psychically?
Yeah, I could have recorded it if I'd had my recorder with me. I'm sure that I could have picked it up because I was hearing it with my physical ears. So I'm sure that if I'd had a recorder with me, I could have recorded the sound.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. Do you go to places where you're kind of like, well, this is not a day of work, and you can switch it all off so you don't get anything coming through?
No, I never switch it off. I've never turned it off in all these years. I've read professionally for over 50 years now, and it's always on, and it's not a burden to me. It doesn't drain me. It's a joy, and I enjoy picking up on all the energies and things coming from the environment of places that I go to or the people that are around me. And sometimes, just for grins, we'll be out eating at a restaurant, and I'll tell my wife, I'll say, see this couple over there? He's involved in such and such, and she likes such and such, and blah, blah, blah. And I'll just start picking up on things around people in the restaurant. And it's just me. It's a normal way of life, normal way of living.
Is there a role for humor in amongst paranormal and paranormal investigations?
Oh, absolutely, there is. And, you know, we have to have humor in life. We have to have humor in everything. Without humor, life becomes grim and dull and lifeless. And there absolutely is a role for humor there. And there are humorous experiences that are directly related to the paranormal. One of those I had when I was a teenager, I was living on my own in an apartment. And I had some buddies of mine. These guys were rough and tumble tough guys. You know, there's people that think there's tough, that are tough, and then there are people that are tough. Well, these boys were tough. I mean, one of them was a bull rider. All of them were muscular. All of them were experienced in bar fights and all this type of thing. They wouldn't back down from the devil himself. I mean, these were rough and tumble old boys and very good friends of mine. And so they were there at my apartment one night, and they said, let's have a seance, do a seance for us. And I said, okay. So we lit a candle, gathered around the candle in a circle, turned off the lights, the room lights. And this one buddy of mine, it was so hilarious. He says in this loud, dramatic voice, he goes, if there's anyone here, give us a sign now. And the candle went out just like somebody had blown it out with their breath. And you never seen so many rough and tumble old boys jump up and feel around in the darkness in a panic for the light switch to get the light on. It was hilarious. All these guys that just weren't afraid of anything, this just terrified them. And it was laughable. I was having such a big laugh over it. And they would never come back to my apartment at night again after that. And sometimes they were even reluctant to come back during the day. So that was an example of some funny things that happened. And then there's just kind of offbeat things. And I write about this in the book. During one of the readings, I don't do couples because there may be something that the other side gives me for one person that's so intimate and that they want to keep private that they don't want to discuss. And I don't want to reveal it to their partner or the other person if they don't want it revealed. So I only read for one person at a time. So we had this family friend. I had done a reading for her, and she was so super impressed with it. She said, "Can I bring my daughter to you for a reading? She wants a reading." I said, "Yeah." She says, "Can I sit in?" And I usually didn't allow that, but for some reason I did that time, and I'm glad that I did, because her mother was there to confirm what I was saying. And I was reading for her daughter. I was telling her about this guy that she liked, that she was interested in, or dating, or whatever. And I said, "Look, one thing that you have to understand about this guy, if you're going to have a successful relationship with him, is that he's not an indoor guy. He's not a sit at the desk in an office guy. He's not a suit and tie guy. He has to be outdoors, moving, doing something, you know, physical." And she looked at me and she goes, "Oh, you're so wrong about that." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Yeah, because he's not a suit and tie type guy. He wouldn't be inside in an office at a desk. He's got to be outside doing something." And I looked at her with my jaw dropped, and her mother looked at her with her jaw dropped, and her mother looked over at me, and I looked at her, and she said, "What?" And her mother looked at her and said, "That's exactly what John just said. Weren't you paying attention?" So all kinds of quirky, weird things can happen that you can find humor in.
So with all your paranormal experiences, have you ever seen UFOs or had anything like that?
Yeah, I've had several UFO experiences. Excuse me. And what was really interesting, the first UFO experience I had, I guess I was around 20 years old. So I had been reading professionally for a few years already. And I had a ton of paranormal experiences that I knew were absolutely real because they occurred on the physical realm and other people had witnessed them, seen them, experienced them. But I didn't believe in UFOs. And I'd seen the interviews, I'd read the books, I'd read the magazine articles. I had heard people talk about it and things, but for some reason, I just didn't believe in UFOs. And then all that changed when I had this experience in broad daylight with witnesses where we saw a UFO up close and personal, clearly a metallic UFO. There was no smoke, no flame, no noise, no nothing, no obvious means of propulsion. And that occurred, like I say, in broad daylight with probably, I know, at least 30 witnesses, maybe 50, maybe more. And they actually saw the thing and were pointing up at it before I saw it. And so then I had to change religions, if you will. I had to change denominations and say, okay, yeah, they are there. They are real. They do exist. And subsequent to that time, I've had probably, 10, 12, maybe more sightings of UFOs, including some interactions with one, which was very puzzling.
Oh, wow. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I've always been an outdoorsman. I love the outdoors. Outdoors as much as possible and love to sit out at night, look up at the stars and things. And I was sitting out one night. It was a beautiful starlit night, clear. And over to the right of where I was looking, so off to my right-hand side of the sky, but down low, there was this large orange translucent glowing orb, just this big ball of orange light that was very slowly moving through the sky. And it was real near. It wasn't like off in the distance. And I watched it and I looked for landing lights or blinking lights or anything else or engine noise. And there wasn't any, just this glowing orb of light. And as it got near us, I said, "Son of a gun, that's a UFO." And so I stood up and got right in front of me. And again, it was near and very large. So as it got right in front of me, I stood up and psychically and verbally, I said, "If you can hear me, stop and reverse course slightly." And Simon, the darn thing stopped and reversed course in the air slightly. And I was just blown away. And then from that height where it was, that low, probably barely above treetop level, it shot up into the sky about the level of where the planes fly high overhead, you know, like 35, 45,000 feet. It shot up that to that height in less than a second's time. No noise, no sonic boom, no nothing. Just bam, there it is. And it hovered there a second, and then it shot off up into the stars, literally in less than a second's time. You could see it moving around among the stars. And then it shot off into the universe, vanished from sight. And I was just so gobsmacked. I didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say. I thought, my God, to realize that these objects have that capability, they're so far flung from anything that we know about science or physics or propulsion, and that they can do that kind of instant acceleration without making any atmospheric disturbance, any noise, no sonic boom, anything like that. It just blew me away to see that and to experience that. And then the more frustrating thing to me was, obviously, the occupants of the craft, the intelligences, whatever, heard me and responded to me. Oh, why wouldn't they stick around and let's have a little conversation? You know, where are you guys from? Why are you here? Is there something you need from us? Is there something we need from you? Can you help us with, you know, sickness, world peace, healing, whatever? But nothing, just this demonstration. And every time that I've tried to communicate with craft again, there's been no response. And so that's just kind of mind-boggling to me, that especially it looks like if they really wanted communication, and then there's somebody like me that has a virtual clear channel open, you know, all the time, it looks like they would come down and make some kind of meaningful contact, but they haven't. But that was an experience that just to this day it blows my mind because of the drama behind it. To see that type of acceleration and that ability, and to realize that's out there, way far beyond anything that we have, it's just mind blowing.
So, what was it like when you were exploring the assassination of Abraham Lincoln for the History Channel? Was that successful?
That was incredible. My God, that was incredible. To stand in the spot where history took place, where history was made, for anybody, that's tremendous. I mean, if you're just an ordinary tourist and you go to, you know, Ford's Theater or the Peterson House or the Mud House or any of those things and stand there where history was literally made, that's phenomenal just for a tourist. But when you're psychic and you can perceive in the atmosphere and see and feel what happened in those places and see images of the people involved and get names of people that were there and accurately recount, you know, what happened at the time. That was the most mind-blowing experience on the planet. It was such an honor and such a great thing. And what made it really great for me is that I am the worst student of history on the planet. I don't know history. I don't like history. I was literally the guy in grade school writing the test answers in ink on his hand, trying to pass the history test, and then sometimes still couldn't. So I was the perfect candidate to do this because I said, okay, if this guy gets anything that we can verify, he's obviously getting it from his psychic gift, and that is not his knowledge of history. And we were able to get so many things. I got so many things that they were able to absolutely verify as being 100% accurate. We captured paranormal activity on film. Other people witnessed paranormal activity. So it was one of the greatest experiences I ever had.
And were there skeptics in the crew there, like the cameramen and sound guys and that kind of thing?
There were, and it became my job to myself. I said, you know what? I'm not going to let anybody finish the shoot without becoming a believer. And so my, excuse me, even my producer, paranormal shows were just very, very hot at the time. And so my producer had signed on not so much a believer as, okay, paranormal shows are hot, doing this for the History Channel, that's got a lot of cachet. This gives me work, you know? So, okay, we'll shoot this guy who says he's a psychic. So I wanted everybody to understand that there is a reality to this, that it is real, and that yes, there's fakes and ponies out there by the score, but just because you can fake something doesn't mean the real doesn't exist. And I wanted people to understand that, to believe in that, to believe in me, to believe in the psychic powers, and to believe in the other side. And I knew that would only make the show better. So one of the things I would do, for example, we would be traveling in the van from one shooting location to another. And my producer was on the phone, and I tapped him on the leg, and I said, I wouldn't interrupt your phone call unless this was important, and it is. I said, you're talking to a friend of yours, a buddy of yours. And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. Ask him, tell him I'm picking up that his, I can't remember who it was, I think maybe a grandmother or whatever, that his grandmother just died, and that he's been made the executor of the estate. Is that right? And so he says, hey, I got to ask you something here. He says, we're filming. I'm working with a psychic. And he just interrupted me to tell me to ask you this. And he said, and he told him what I said. And the guy was like, holy cow, how can this guy know this? Because that's what had just happened. His relative had just died, and he'd been made executor of the estate. And I said, okay, the other side has a message for him in this. Tell him that when he goes through this will, make sure all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, and that everything's done the right way, or something's going to get out of hand, go out of whack, and things aren't going to go the way they're supposed to. So he told him that, and my producer was like, how did you know that? And I said, well, this is what I do. So then I begin to receive messages for other people in the crew, and I don't think anybody left a non-believer anymore. I think everybody was a believer by the time we finished shooting. And then especially when we begin to capture paranormal phenomena in film, it was like, okay, you know, something's going on here you can't explain. This is real. This is really happening. And then not only would we get things on film, members of the crew would hear audible paranormal phenomena that I heard. So it was a really exciting thing. And I think I was able to open up the reality of the other side and the reality of psychic gifts to everybody in a way that was dignified, that made sense. You know, it wasn't the silly ghost chasers on TV that go, give me a sign. And when something happens, they scream and run like little girls. You know, none of that nonsense. I didn't go into any place disrespectful or cursing the spirits or challenging the spirits. It was all very dignified and all very professional, and all very good. And indeed, that's the only way that we got in some of those historic places to film, because they had opened up to ghost hunters before and paranormal investigators before that had come in and acted the fool and made fools out of themselves. And they were like, nope, never again. Nobody's coming in here again. But we have the cachet of Atlas Media and the cachet of the History Channel and their promise that, like, look, we've vetted this guy. We've done a audition filming with him before we decided to shoot the pilot. He's super professional. He doesn't do any of that nonsense. There's no silliness, no goofiness. And so that was the way that we managed to get into these places. And it was really remarkable. It was an incredible time. Once in a lifetime experience.
Did you connect with Lincoln's spirit or the assassin's spirit?
I connected with both and with several other of the spirits that were there. Booth's spirit was really interesting because to connect with him, the question that they had, that the History Channel had when we were shooting, was there at any point that Booth was repentant or sorrowful or felt bad or felt guilty about what he did? And every time I tuned in on him, up to the moment of his death, it was like, nope. he was proud of what he did. He thought what he did was good. He believed 100% in his cause and what he was doing and the motivation behind it and the reasoning behind it. And he never had any bit of repentance or remorse for it all the way up until his death. And in tuning in on Lincoln's spirit, it was really amazing because Lincoln was so stoic. And he was so unafraid. And something I found out that I didn't know until long after we had shot the pilot and several years later, I found out that Lincoln had something like 10,000 death threats in his life. And he just shook all that off, did his presidency, did everything he had to do, and walked through with all his courage and dignity and grace. And that was the way he ended his life. And you know, it took a while for Lincoln to die. He didn't die immediately. They took him across the street to the Peterson House and had doctors come in, and then he died the following morning early. And throughout all of that, I could tune in on him and his spirit and what he felt and what he was doing. And he just had this absolute, he thought Booth was despicable, a despicable coward. And he just detested Booth for what he did. And as he hovered between, moving between this world and the next, he tried to reach out and console his wife as best he could from the spirit realm. And he was very stoic, very dignified about it all, and very unafraid. He was like, okay, well, I did what I could. I stood brave in the face of danger. This is how it ended. I felt like it was probably going to come down to this. And I'll move on and keep doing what I can on the other side. It was really amazing to tune into and to feel.
Can people see this episode on YouTube or somewhere?
Unfortunately, they can't. It never did air. And I've got a tape of it somewhere, a CD of it somewhere that I don't even know where it is right now. We've moved so many times. I've got a copy of it on my computer, but it wasn't released. And the copyright is still under jointly, as far as I know, Atlas Media and the History Channel. And so there's no way to get it out there to broadcast it for people to see without them, you know, relinquishing the rights or granting that permission. And they have, we haven't been able to secure that for all these years. So unfortunately, no way for people to see it. But I really think, in all honesty, we would have set the bar for every paranormal show to come, because it was so well produced, so well edited, so well filmed. And everything was approached in a serious and a dignified manner. And the fact that we caught an irrefutable paranormal evidence of paranormal activity on film, the fact that the things that I picked up on, we were able to validate either through the docents there or through the Lincoln experts that we had on camera with us, or through the research that we had, you know, access to the best researchers, Lincoln researchers were. And they could comb through all these mountains of books and papers and documents and things and look for validations to what I had come up with. And we were able to validate everything that I picked up on that I saw there. So it's a shame it never went to air. And I understand that happens a lot in the film industry, TV industry. So, but it was really disappointing that it never went to air.
Well, hopefully sometime it will come out. Or
I wish that it would, at least, you know, we shot only the pilot episode and then didn't go any further, but the pilot episode by itself is worth watching, I think, and I would love to see that hit the air at some point.
We've just about run out of time. So we were talking about your book, The Can Sack Ghost, but can you tell us about your other books as well?
Yeah, I've got 5 in print now. And those are all available at the Amazon UK site. And if people want to know more about the books and about each book, they can go to johnrussellauthor.com and use that address, because it's a forwarding address. It goes to the site where I've rebuilt my site. But that's a long address to have to give out. So if somebody just goes to johnrussellauthor.com, it'll lead you to my author's site, with all the books, the description of the books, what they're about, some of the awards and endorsements I've won, and readers' reviews, and so on and so forth. And then, like I say, if you want to order the books, they're all available at the Amazon UK. There are some of the other UK stores that also carry them online. If you want the paperback, you'll have to order it and wait, obviously. But like if you go to Amazon, you want the Kindle version, you can download those immediately. But there are other UK bookstores that do make them available online in the paperback version. You can order from there, or you can order from Amazon or get the Kindle version immediately.
Can people book a reading with you?
Absolutely. And for that, go to johnrussell.net, johnrussell.net. And I've read for clients, like I say, in over 40 countries. I've read for a ton of UK clients, Just read for somebody from the UK just here a while back. So, yeah, absolutely, we can do that.
Well, it's been great having you back on the podcast. Thanks a lot for coming.
Simon, I appreciate it so much. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to you. And look forward to talking again down the road. Thank you so much.
This week, I was talking to John Russell about his book, The Cansack Ghost. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you get access to the extended episodes. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions, and you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.